You're listening to 91.5 FM, WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. You are tuned in to the Motorsports Hour, talking about all sorts of racing. It happens here on WPRK every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Let me give you the website, themotorsportshour.com and WPRK.org. Check us out online and take us with you wherever you are in the world via the WPRK app. My name is Clark. I am your host as always, and want to start off by wishing everybody out there a happy Mother's Day. All the mothers, a happy Mother's Day, especially my mother and my wife. A very happy, happy Mother's Day to them. And with that, let's bring on Mr. Chris Wire to Wire. Wire, how are you doing over there, man?
It's my last day of vacation, bro.
It
how do you
is.
Think I'm doing?
Yeah, you had the whole week off, but I tell you what, when your vacation consists on whatever it was, Thursday, you called me and said, hey, can I, or you sent me a text that says, hey, can I borrow your wheelbarrow? That doesn't sound like a very fun vacation to me, though.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but well, I did it to myself.
Yeah, so. Well, sometimes that happens.
And, you know. My neighbors look at me like I'm crazy, like, hey, there's usually a truckload of guys that go through the neighborhood. You could just pay them to do that.
Yeah, but what's the fun of that?
You know. Maybe not. So I didn't.
Yeah? Were you able to get it done?
No.
No, not done yet, huh?
No, but I have a whole nother week before the rest of the family returns.
Okay.
So I got time.
All right, there you go. There you go. I think what you do, now the rest of the family is off, far away, exotic places right now. You're here. I think you leave all the work for them. So when they get back, you say, hey, I hope you enjoyed your vacation. See that giant pile of dirt out there. Go, spread that around, kind of thing.
They don't even know about the pile of dirt.
Okay, they don't, yeah.
So I'm trying to get all this stuff done, and when they come back, they go, wow, what were you doing while we were gone?
I was
it's
working
not hard. Work out that way.
They would come back and go,
I'm a realist.
They would have no idea, Wire. No idea.
There's going to be rain. You know, you can't get every little speck of dirt out. So, yeah. You know, the remainder of the dirt's going to have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But I got a plan.
Okay.
Because if I don't use all the dirt, there's a lot.
Yeah.
If I don't use all the dirt. What is one thing that you can absolutely give away to a guy?
Dirt.
Free dirt.
Free dirt is good. Hey, tell you what. I spend lots of money in real estate development on dirt. I will take free dirt. I love free dirt.
You want free dirt? There will be some.
Yeah. How many? You got about 20,000 yards over there?
No. I'm down to probably five.
I'm about 25,000 yards short in one of my projects.
I can throw you a couple.
It's pricey number to be short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yet a couple thousand.
Who did that math?
Engineer. Who else? I love engineers so much though. They're great. But they forget about the compaction factor, Wire. So if you take dirt out, you put it on the ground, you then have to compact it. So 10 yards is actually 8 yards compacted, about 20% compaction factor that they always forget to, you know, take whatever that number is, multiply it times 0.12 or 0.8 or whatever you're calculating. That's your real number, not... It's not, you know, yard in, yard out.
That's a rookie move, it sounds like.
It's a rookie move that is made by veteran engineers day in and day out.
But we love engineers.
We do. We love them. They make the world go round somehow, I guess.
Round, flat, vertical, horizontal.
Yeah, every which way. I don't know. Anyway, they're good at putting black lines on white pieces of paper. I know that.
I know you don't want that guy building a bridge. You know, if he's working with dirt, eventually you'll overcome the dirt problem.
The thing is, that is the guy building the bridge. That's
if he's
the deal.
Building a bridge, you don't want the guy who only accounts for 80% of what the bridge needs and not the full 100% of it.
I don't know. Engineers are just, they're a different type. It is a very unique type of person that becomes an engineer. You know my engineer joke, Wire?
No, please.
How do you know an outgoing engineer? They're an outgoing person. How do you know when an engineer is an outgoing person, has an outgoing personality?
I don't know.
They stare at your shoes instead of their own when they're talking to you.
Oh.
Yes. So, anyway. All right, rant over about engineers, I guess. I don't know how we even got on that. I thought we were going to be talking about lacrosse. Hey,
we got there via free dirt.
Free dirt, yes. Congrats all the Rollins grads, graduation today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good news for them.
Let me just say, they got out of Dodge in a hurry.
They did. They got out quick.
This place is cleaned out.
Yes, it is. It is cleaned out, and, you know, parking makes it a little bit easier for the parking.
I'm going to say, you know, we love the students, but I got to say, I like the parking, too.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. Congratulations to all the recent graduates. And, we got some racing to talk about today, though, Wire.
A little bit.
Yeah, we had some racing over out in Laguna Seca. A little IMSA action going on. We've got some Formula One to preview. All kinds of good stuff going on in the world of racing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Indy has begun.
It has, yes. Indy, we have the Indy Grand Prix. What do we call that? The Indy?
I think they call it the Indy Grand Prix.
The Indy Grand Prix?
Pretty okay. Sure.
It's on the street circuit at Indianapolis.
Well, the road course.
The road course. Street circuit, road course, whatever it is. Let me tell you, I had a plan worked out here. Rollins women got knocked out on Friday of the NCAA tournament. Had they won their next two games, they would have been, had they won that game and won a game today, they would have been in the national semifinals. Didn't make it. Great game, though, that they played on Friday. I had the privilege to go over to Tampa, call that game. It was a blast. Had a great time. Just came up short. Had they won that and won again today, they wouldn't have been in Indianapolis next week.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, I think I'm going to need to broadcast this game from Indianapolis, and the semifinals on Friday, national championship on Sunday. I think I'm going to need to broadcast that game. Say, you know, hey, Friday. Oh, wait, Saturday's open? I might have to go to do a little qualifying action. Could be fun. I tell you what, watching qualifying at Indy is still very exciting to me. You know, you watch qualifying in other sports and everything, and it's not always the most in the other forms of racing. It's certainly in sports car, it's not really exciting. Formula One, it's exciting, but Indy qualifying is unique in itself, and I think it is really exciting still.
It's. I mean, I've watched it for decades,
yeah.
And it's still confusing.
Yeah.
The T car that you've got, you know, you put the car in line, then you pull it out of line, and there's all this strategic placement going on because you want to be the car that's out there when the sun sets a little bit, but the track still has temperature, and, you know, the air starts to cool, which means you make a little more power. And these guys, back to the engineers, these guys whittle this thing down and try to be the guy
mm-hmm.
that gets their driver in that position.
Yeah, you got the whole issue. Okay, now if you go back in line, look, you set your time, but if you go back in line and you set a slower time, that's your new time. You don't. It's not just whatever you run. It's a four-lap qualifying session. So you're talking about running your average over the course of four laps. And, you know, you could set a really good time. And, hey, I'm an eighth or something like that. This should be good. Well, let's try for better. Maybe not. And it's different this year because, you know, they do qualifying. It used to be that was kind of the deal. But now they qualify on Saturday, and it's like sets the field for 15 through 33 or something like that. And then on Sunday, it's, you know, 1 through 15 that they set the field for.
Do they still set the front row on day one, don't they?
I don't think so. I think they do that on Sunday now. I think that's a big deal on TV.
Okay, that would have been a little bit of a change.
It's changed a lot over the years. You know, you got the carb day, you got the bump day, you got this day, the, you know, whatever day, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I still don't have it figured out, and that's the
I never have.
That's the wild part.
Well, what do you is carb day, is that the only day you were allowed to adjust carburetors back in the day, I guess, on carb day?
Still.
Yeah.
They still can only adjust their carbs on
carb day. Okay. When did IndyCar stop running carburetors?
70s.
Yeah. When did NASCAR stop?
2005. Something like that.
Yeah. I think it might be later than that.
It might be later than that.
I think it might be later than that.
Might be later. You're right.
Speaking of a weird aside, I'm watching this thing on this old RX-7, the first gen RX-7. And I'm remembering going to school, girl who would take me to school, Ashley Cook, her dad had an old RX-7, purple, carbureted. And, you know, I remember I'm watching this thing, and for some reason I got on this old RX-7 kick, the original, what was that generation called? I'm sure.
Oh, it was the FB.
The FB.
Yeah, but it's the 12A carbureted engine.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it, and remembering that car flashes back to being 14, 15 years old, my neighbor picking me up, going to school in this thing, and I just remember, you know, cold mornings once or twice a year here in Florida. It doesn't happen all that time. Difficulty getting it started, pulling out the choke, getting the car running and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. But for some reason, there was a bunch of stuff on Doug DeMuro and Jay Leno did something on their
stuff
on YouTube this week. But
Jay loves him RX-7.
What's not to love about them? They're cool cars, man.
He even went, and this is something I didn't know until my brother used to work for a Mazda dealer back in the mid-80s, and every now and then, you know, he was down in New York City, and he would drive home for the weekend, and they would always let him take a car. It was very nice. They were very liberal about that back in the day, and he would often bring home a GSL SE 13B powered first gen, and that thing, just like Jay's, had the red line buzzer.
So what was the red line on something like that anyway?
It was probably 8,500, 8,400.
That's great. In the 1980s, 8,500 RPM on a Wankel, on a rotary, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not a piston engine, but they were a lot of fun.
Yeah. They're cool cars.
They made great race cars too.
That IT7 class was always fun to watch. And is that still around?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose it could be, but I imagine those cars have moved on.
Yeah.
They had Spec 7 for a while. That was a thing. I don't think it was in SECA, but I think NASA ran a Spec 7 class for a while.
That's cool. You were building a RX-7 at one point.
With an ITS. Yeah, ITS. That's it. The FC.
FC, FB, FC.
That was the second gen.
FD was the one like the...
That's the twin turbo.
That's twin turbo, the
Fast and Furious?
Fast and Furious, that's what I was looking for, yes. Fast and Furious ever. And then they had the RX-8, which was incredibly dominant in Grand Am and everything and all that. So anyway, speaking of being dominant in Grand Am, let's jump over to IMSA, shall we? Let's go to Laguna Seca. Monster Raceway, nice. Laguna Seca. Or actually, it's not Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca anymore, is it?
No, I think it's Hyundai Raceway Laguna Seca.
Hyundai Raceway or Honda?
No, Hyundai.
Hyundai. Okay.
I think it's Hyundai now.
Okay. All right. I'll take it. Well, let's go to Laguna Seca, shall we?
Maybe they call it N Raceway.
All right.
You know, that's Hyundai's performance brand.
Yes, N. You know, you've got BMW with the M. You've got, you know, Honda used to have the R. Type R. Now they've jumped a letter. Now they're on the Type S or Acura and everything. They still have the Civic Type R, but in the Acura, it's the Acura Type S. Came out with the Type S Integra this week, by the way, or maybe it was a week ago. And I saw it and I thought, $50,000 for that? No, thank you.
Yeah. It's like $7,000 or $8,000 more than the Civic Type R.
Yeah.
And neither one of them worth it, in my opinion. I think that if you're going to bring forth the name from a very storied model that you had 20 years ago, you ought to make it be something special.
Yeah.
Not very special looking.
You know, it doesn't look very special, but it's $55,000 or something by the time you're done with it. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for an Acura, you know, smaller car. A lot of money.
For sure.
And, you know, the Civic, I kind of like the Civic Type R, the new one, not the old one that had a bunch of J.C. Whitney parts glued on it. I like the new one where they knew where to stop. And I looked at it, I'm like, that's kind of a cool car. I kind of like that thing. I like that. How much is that? $47,000? That's a little much.
Really? You think?
Yeah. So let's go, however, to WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. is the official name.
Okay.
But it was.
So where does Hyundai come in? Because it was branded Hyundai everywhere.
Because it was the Motul Course de Monterey powered by Hyundai N.
Ah,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is some Aston Martin naming conventions coming in now into IMSA Racing Wire.
Yeah. Not to be outdone.
Let's talk a little bit about Laguna Seca. They've had a lot of changes over the years. Laguna Seca, I say they've had a lot of changes over the years. Laguna Seca was run by this group. It's owned by Monterey County. The racetrack is. The land on the racetrack is on. And the racetrack itself is owned by, you know, the county. Owns the land, owns the track. They lease it out to a group, and there had been one group that had basically held the lease on it forever, you know, for 40 years or something like that. And they went in to renew the lease a couple years ago, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't like it, whatever. We're going to change it up. We're going to make all these changes and all that stuff to Monterey. Haven't really seen them yet. Look, it is still a good racetrack and everything, but it needs a spruce up out there.
It's going to get one.
Yeah, it's needed one. It's coming, apparently. And it
all
was
brand
evident.
New racing surface.
Yeah, they need to repave it. I get that there's dirt everywhere and it's Monterey, but can we put some grass seed down? Can we put some irrigation out there?
No.
No, we can't do that?
They've done something better.
What are they?
Did you watch it?
I watched some of it today. As much as I could.
You don't love it?
As
you don't
much
love
as I could.
The extensions that they put outside of every, you know, track out point from apex out, where ostensibly they did it for drainage, which it absolutely needed.
Yeah.
But they put an extra 2 yards of asphalt outside of the rumble strips. And I know you love that.
I do love that because nothing's better than when you make a mistake not being penalized for it on a racetrack.
Yeah. So I'm not saying people didn't go off, but
it just makes the racetrack bigger.
That's all it. Well, I mean, in effect, that's what it did, because everybody on a track out now, instead of having the right side tires in a left-hand corner on the rumble strip at exit, now they have the left side tires, and they are using that extra 7 or 8 feet of asphalt for the rest of the car because it's asphalt. So ostensibly for draining, but practically not so much.
Yeah. Well, we ended up having everybody there this weekend, meaning GTP, LMP2, GTD Pro, and GTD. No LMP3 there, which, by the way, LMP3 is going to be done after this year. They have announced in IMSA some news coming in to this race is that LMP3, which has competed in WeatherTech, that top tier, is no longer going to be competing in there. And why? I know you are heartbroken about this.
Well, I want to thank them for listening to the show.
Yes.
And taking, you know, with an open mind, our feedback and, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Our feedback was they add nothing. All they do is detract. And it's like, oh, there's a great race going on, and there's a P3 car in the way yet again.
Yeah. It's.
And they got wrecked by a P3 car.
And I think, you know, your analysis was spot on. You know, it's a way for teams to make money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought it was probably a way for, you know, drivers to get their feet wet, you know, coming up from different disciplines, coming up from GT, whatever. They wanted to move into prototypes if that was their goal at some point in time. It's a good place to get, you know, started. But it doesn't have to be part of the big show.
No, it doesn't. And they have this new, so, you know, you've always had this kind of two tiers in IMSA. You've had IMSA and whatever it is, Grand Am Cup or whatever, Grand Am, and then you'd have Grand Am Cup or whatever it would be. And then now you have the Michelin Endurance Challenge, which is a GT. Is there a Michelin GT Challenge that's called, or is it just Michelin Endurance Challenge? Or
I think it's just the Michelin Tire Challenge.
Okay, so that is what the series is called now. That's kind of the feeder series, as you would call it, to the WeatherTech series, you know, the cars that run in the Rolex 24 and everything. Seen some great racing in other series, and you do see great racing and some great drivers and a great place to learn. But they've never had prototypes in there. I don't think they are now, but now they actually have a third series as well, the VP Racing Challenge Series or something like that, whatever it is. They actually raced at the Roar before the Rolex this year. You know, I guess we need another, you know, series to feed drivers into. I guess I'm all for it, whatever, but nonetheless, and there's these kind of two-feeder series feeding up to WeatherTech, and yeah, putting P3 into one of those series is the best thing to do. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing him run with all the GT cars in the Michelin Pilot Challenge or whatever it is. I'm not opposed to doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's difficult to say whether they would add to the show. There's a lot of similarities in overall lap times between, you know, Michelin Pilot cars and the LMP3s. LMP3s could probably be tweaked to be a little bit faster, which would probably be the way to go because, you know, with the GT4-based cars, they're all built to a spec. So, you know, rearranging that spec to make them faster than, you know, LMP cars is probably a lot more difficult than it would just to, you know, unleash a restrictor on an LMP3 car and give them more power.
Yeah.
They're obviously faster in the corners. You could still make them faster on the straightaways as well.
Well, let's jump over to the race that was, shall we? And how were you able to catch much of the race today?
I watched it all. Yeah,
good for you. Between Mother's Day, between lacrosse, between the kids and everything, and trying to get them wrangled around, I was able to catch about the last 30 minutes of it while I was wrestling my four-year-old in a inflatable pool. We need a pool really bad. Can I have $100,000 to build a pool?
From somebody.
For one, that's what they cost now. It's insane.
You're good for it.
I'm good for it. But it is insane, the cost to build a pool.
So, one hand, pool.
Yeah.
Another hand, new Lexus. Where do you go? What do you do?
Pool.
Okay.
Yeah. Pool. Definitely.
That's on tape now.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't drive a Lexus. My wife does. I drive a Ford. You ask
her. If you had $100,000 for a Lexus, you might be driving a Lexus.
If I had $100,000 to spend on a car, I wouldn't be on a Lexus.
Not an LC?
No. No, I like it. I like the LC.
You can wait for it to come down in value?
Yeah.
I look, buy it at 60.
You know, there's a lot of nice cars you can spend $60,000 on. None of them BMWs anymore, unfortunately. I think I'd probably a Porsche of some sort.
Not for 60 grand.
You got to be able to find something. 996 for 60 grand now, right?
Yeah, but is that the one you want?
No, not 9. Or 991.1 or something like that.
One worth having? Maybe not. The market is just
ridiculous. You got to be able to find a Carrera 2, S for 60, 65.
Maybe something that's not a decent spec or a Cabriolet or something like that.
Really? Yeah. They're that expensive now?
They're I mean, I only see the enthusiast cars, you know, bring a trailer, that kind of stuff. It's top end of the market.
Yep.
But, you know, I mean, even the old Carreras, you know, the 80s era Carreras, late 80s, 87, 88, 89 Carreras are 70, 80 grand.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
Yeah. 996 is the generation that I had. I do not want that again. 997.
And that is the black sheep right now.
Yeah, I had a 996.
But the people that are the want Porsches that don't either know the history of the 996 or they don't care about the history if they find a decent version of it that they like, you know, they'll grab them up. They're still buying them, and it's an entry level. It's now the entry level Porsche for a 911 series.
I think, yeah.
993s are going for big money. Last air-cooled, you know, model.
Yeah.
And everything else is just, it's like six figures and up. It's just ridiculous. Probably never to return to, you know, affordability for you and myself. Just not going to happen.
I guess it's not. I don't know. I'd I'd buy a new Corvette then. How about that?
You could.
I could buy a new Corvette.
You could still buy an. You could still buy an M. You would have a lot of fun with.
A what?
An M. M3.
A BMW.
Yeah.
An E46 M3. I can get an
E46
M3.
E92 M3.
Not going past that though.
Yeah. Oh, you already have one.
Yeah. Look. The newer ones are. BMW has lost its way. Okay. Let's talk about IMSA, shall we? We had a race at Laguna Seca. We had some great racing. It's still a fun track to watch racing. There's still ample spots for passing or some good spots for passing and all that kind of stuff. With that being said, though, for some reason, this track just used to seem bigger to me, and it just doesn't anymore. Does it? You ever get that sense of watching a race at Laguna Seca now? The track just feels condensed to me.
Perhaps. I would offer that the changes to the track make it faster all around.
Yeah.
And when you take cars that are as capable as the GTP cars and you put them on a track that you don't increase in size, but you somehow make the track faster, the track feels smaller. The lap times are quicker. There's, you know, shorter braking zones. There's, you know, less opportunity to, you know, accelerate, you know, get a drive out of a corner because the corners are now so much faster than they used to be. And, you know, these prototypes are not slender. So, you know, they're you can make them pretty wide pretty easily. And because they all make about the same power, it's difficult to pass. There's not a long enough straightaway.
Yeah.
To really get a good draft like you would at COTA or someplace like that. So there's a lot of things working against it. That being said, the multi-class aspect of today's race
really,
was, yeah, you know, incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, that really comes into play. You know, because if you get stuck behind a GT car on a certain section of the track, it really can kill you. We had, you know, some comings together between GT cars and prototype cars in the closing moments of the race, last half hour of the race kind of thing. You know, a lot of stuff going on, bumping and banging. And, yeah, that multi-class aspect really reared its head today. Well, we did have, you know, we had a Porsche on the pole. That Porsche is looking faster and faster and faster.
The chairman was in the house, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, the captain's there. You know, you got to.
Captain.
You got to do well. The captain. Porsche wants to win Le Mans this year. They really want to win Le Mans this year with the 963.
We've seen, you know, early on, it does not have the pace of the Cadillacs.
Right.
But, you know, they went to Spa in, you know, varying weather conditions. They had a good showing at Spa. You know, they won at the last IMSA race.
In Long Beach.
Long Beach. And, you know, that was a, they didn't sit on the front row. They weren't the fastest car, but they got it done. And now they had a front row lockout. Both Penske cars on the front row. So they're getting there.
Yeah.
They are, you know, they're working. And that's part of the plan, too. I mean, you don't just take this car and go to Le Mans and say, you know what, we're going to be great when we get there. No, you got to prove it all along the way.
But I do get the sense that everything that every car, every Porsche is doing right now, whatever they're doing is in preparation for Le Mans and coming up here in basically a month's time.
Well, they now have customer cars.
That's
right. The 963 is now a customer available race car. JDC Miller Motorsports showed up with one this weekend.
I think that's awesome. I think that's cool. I think that's exciting. I think that's right in the, you know, the vein of what the GTP era was at IMSA, and what the Porsche 962 was. I mean, the Porsche 962, did the Porsche factory ever really run a team?
A lot of blurred lines with that because,
yeah,
Porsche Motorsport was intimately involved in all these teams. They weren't the money guys. It wasn't factory money. But when you bought a Porsche race car, and, you know, all the other manufacturers eventually followed suit, But I think Porsche was one of the very first that had Porsche racing, Porsche Motorsport, and this, you know, really intimate involvement between manufacturer and race team. Maybe you could say Ferrari, you know, had that as well when they were, you know, running Le Mans too. But, I mean, Porsche seems to have perfected it.
Yeah, they have, and you know, they didn't. That era was such an interesting era, that GTP era, too. And I love the 962, probably my favorite sports racer of all time, behind the Bentley Speed 8, which is the most gorgeous car ever built. But I love the Porsche 962. I love that they built so many of them. I love that they were so successful for so long. I love the way they look. I love the way they sound. I love the way they breathe fire. You know, just cool, cool cars. The 963 is a cool car as well. I think this new era and everything, I like the cars. I like the action on track. I hope somebody can, you know, knock off Toyota this year. Is it going to be Porsche? I don't know. The way they have treated every single race leading up to Le Mans, it might be. It might be this year. It might be their year.
It could very well be. And, you know, I mean, the Cadillacs look great as well. BMWs aren't the prettiest car out there, but they're getting faster. So I think we're seeing just how, you know, beneficial this, you know, the level of competition in IMSA is, and I think it's going to pay dividends to everybody for, you know, the run up to Le Mans and then the Le Mans weekend. But, you know, it's a sort of a trial by fire, but you got to learn things as you go. And, you know, Toyota's been in WEC, you know, in this instance. I think this is their second year with this car. So they're a little bit ahead of everybody else. But I think Toyota's ready to take one on the chin. I think Porsche may be the one to do it. Cadillac could be one. I mean, Ganassi's going over there with like 17 cars, so it's...
Well, I think you're going to have 4 or 5 Porsches in the race this year. 963s, I think 4... I think 4, or no, you're going to have 4 Porsches. You've got 2 Toyotas. You've got 3 Cadillacs. You know, the Glickenhaus is going to be there, to a couple Ferraris. You know, this is going to be a great Le Mans.
It is going to be a great Le Mans.
I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, today is Mother's Day. Le Mans coming up. Father's Day weekend. My Father's Day wish every year is the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anything. And when I say I don't want anything, I mean I don't want anything. Don't, you know, okay, I'll take a card. That's it. Do not buy me anything. I do not want presents of any shape, form, anything, nothing.
You've got everything.
I've got everything I could possibly want. I really do not want presents. I want to sit on the couch. I want to watch Le Mans all weekend. That's it.
Do you do what I do? Do you throw a little Frenchness into it?
I do. I throw baguettes at my wife when she comes out of the room and asks me to do something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just sit there smoking on the couch all afternoon.
I don't do that.
Yeah. No.
You know, I get
drinking
some nice
wine.
French wine.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a little cheese, you know.
Yeah.
Some, you know, you got to add a little flavor to it.
You do. You do.
Know? Because we're obviously not there. But you kind of got to, and maybe if we were there, we wouldn't be drinking, you know, wine. But I'm pretty sure I would be.
Yeah. No,
I
was drinking beer.
Why not do it in my living room?
I was drinking beer with a bunch of Dutchmen there. When I was at Le Mans in 2006. But let's get back to Monterey, shall we? Porsche, both cars on the pole. Cadillac, very fast. Cadillac ends up proving to be too fast for the Porsches. And Sebastian Vorday and Renga van de Zande come through and win for Cadillac with the Porsche 963, Nick Tandy, Matthew Jaminet, finishing in second, and backing that up is another Cadillac, Pippo Durrani and Sims in that car there. The Acura, which had been so dominant, you know, in the DPI era, is struggling against these new cars.
Well, when you fix the tire pressure issue, then guess what?
Yeah.
You kind of fall back to the field.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on Wayne Taylor. They were not involved in that. So.
No, you're right. But Wayne Taylor finished in fourth, but yes.
Interestingly enough, you know, Porsche dominated the practice sessions and qualifying. So obviously locked out the front row. Two Cadillacs had the top two lap times in the race.
Yeah. And half a second over the Porsches on what we were saying was a, you know, a relatively quick looking track.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot. That's a lot of ground that they are able to. It's that race pace thing that the Cadillacs have race pace, not just the qualifying pace. It's the Formula One. It's the Ferrari race pace. It's the Ferrari, you know, qualifying pace and the Red Bull race pace. And maybe it's not that exaggerated here, but, you know, over half a second.
I didn't quite figure out how they did it because, you know, at the end, Van der Zande had a 4 or 5 second lead on second place. I mean, yeah. he just cruised out. And he was really nowhere at the beginning. Durrani ran the first stint of the race out front. And, yeah, it's just, you know, you never would have predicted by the time the first pit stop rolled around, you never would have predicted the ending. But that's why it was entertaining. That's why we run the race.
Let's go down to GTD Pro, where you had the WeatherTech Racing team. This is a Mercedes AMG out there winning in class. Giancadella and Gunon driving that. Vassar Sullivan in the Lexus RCF. Jack Hawksworth and Barnacote finishing in second. And Bachler and Pile in the PAF Motorsports 911, which... We're watching the race, and my wife goes, I love that car. It is such a good-looking car. Why more teams don't do interesting stuff like that instead of doing the stupid dinosaur, you know, T-Rex thing, I don't know. But it looks good. It always looks good. The FAF
cameraman, you know, every time there's a race, you see pictures of the dinosaur car everywhere.
Yeah.
Alligator car, whatever it is. I mean, you think it's hokey, I think it's hokey, but apparently... You know, they do it because it gets noticed.
Yeah.
Whereas, it does. You know, I appreciate the FAF livery. I love it. I have the hat. So, I like it better with the silver, you know, background, but black isn't bad.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting point. GTD Pro was eighth in GTD.
Yeah. This is, you know, lap times are faster in GTD than GTD Pro. What's going on here, Wire? This was not supposed to be what was going to happen.
No, same spec. A lot of things can happen during the race. But here's the thing. I think there were 4 or 5 GTD Pro cars. So there's really, you know.
Yeah, 5.
And meanwhile, there's 10 plus, you know, GTD cars. So there's a lot more competition. A lot more, you know, fender to bumper racing, and things happen. You know, I think the GTD Pro guys just kind of spread out and made their way home. There wasn't a lot of racing bumper to bumper with the GTD Pro cars.
Yeah,
here and there, but you know, once they got spread out a little bit, you know, it's just about who could bring it home.
And what's, you know, I don't think we were quite, frankly, expecting this to be the case with GTD and GTD Pro, where we're going to have more than one race. I thought it was going to be rare where a GTD car was going to beat a GTD Pro car, and that's not really the case anymore. It's
there's mere tenths,
yeah,
between, you know, a lot of the top tier GTD guys. And, you know, you got to remember that the GTD teams have a GTD Pro driver.
Yeah, they do. They have one driver.
They have one of them, you know, whereas the GTD Pro guys have an entire team's worth. But it's, you know, there's a lot of pace. And if you strategize and if you get somebody who is a part-timer but he's a good shoe, you can do very, very, you know, positive things with that.
And I think what some of that is, too, is – you know, the data nerd in me will go and look at, you know, lap times by drivers within a team, see how far some guys are off. And where you see that real big difference is at the Rolex or something like that, where they're not running two drivers, but they're running four drivers. And you start looking at it going, okay, yeah, you know, there's always typically two guys on those GTD cars that can run it up front and run it well. And, you know, look, somebody's bringing the money to the table, and somebody's is getting paid to do it. And I think what it is when you're running in the Rolex or whatever it is, you got to bring in that much more to other guys that are bringing money to the table. Or maybe it's another guy bringing money. Maybe it's another guy who's a shoe kind of thing in that situation. But the gap there and the top level of a lot of these, you know, silver or bronze or whatever, you know, level driver in GTD is just getting better and better and tighter at the front.
Yeah, and I'm all for it. You know, I mean, it's GT Le Mans as a class was great. You know, they were all factory teams, so they were all really, really good drivers. Competition was almost always very tight. But this is the same but different. You know, it's the spec of the car is exactly the same. What they do with it is, you know, what counts, and the teams are all running at a pretty high level these days. Lexus is running well. Porsche is, you know, clawing back with the new car this year. Lamborghini was, you know, running up front for a while. Aston Martin, always good. They really have that thing dialed in. So, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to in the GTD class, be it pro or not.
Kelly Moss with Riley winning a Porsche 911, winning there. Now, that's weird because I remember it was all IMSA's fault and the balance of power and everything was terrible for the Porsche, and they were really punishing Porsche. It's amazing that they can win now, isn't it? Seeing that they designed the car slow, specifically, for this very reason, because of BOP, and finally come time.
They also designed it to be more drivable at the limit for a wider, broader range of drivers.
Yes, that's exactly what they did. Not as fast, but exactly like you said, they made it a lot easier at the limit to handle, and that's proving true for Porsche, and good for them. Bill Oberlin, Turner Motorsports, finishing in second, BMW M4, and another Kelly Moss with Riley, Porsche 911, finishing there in third position for GTD. And, that's IMSA. So, Wire.
Do a quick rundown with the Indy Grand Prix. And then preview Formula One next week.
Let's do it. Indy Grand Prix at Indianapolis. This is a track that I loved when we first started racing in Formula One there. I loved the layout. And it seems like we've tinkered with the road course more and more and more. And I don't really like it as much.
Well, they neutered it. They made it faster. You know, from turn three now runs straight onto the back straightaway with just a little, you know, kind of left, right flick. And in a downforce car like an Indy car, it's flat. So, you know, I mean, it allows for a longer back straightaway. It allows for a little push to pass. So, you know, you can do some overtakes, but, and then they sort of straightened out. You remember when, you know, back in 2006 or whenever, when you know, the Formula One first ran that track, they had that whole infield S turn, you know, where it was like 180 degree turn to the right, then 180 degree turn to the left, and they cut that all in half. It's just a chicane now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's still a slow chicane, and then of course, you know, they don't run the oval from where they re-enter the oval straight to the finish. There's now another infield section.
Yeah, they have the little chicane 12, 13,
the pits
and 14.
And, yeah. So,
which I miss that run through Indy turn one, which I miss that. Yeah. Running backwards through there. But
yeah, the banking and there's really no harm. It's kind of a no harm, no foul type thing, and it allows for a lot of drafting going down the front straightaway. I don't know why we're still doing, you know, this. Maybe it's a safety ask. Maybe the Indy cars will be too fast in a road course configuration for that. I doubt it, but I don't know. But they just get started on it. They did it with the motorcycles initially.
Yeah.
And when the bikes ran there, and that I understand.
That I get, yes.
But, you know, then the car series adopted it as well, and it's become the norm.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, you know, full crowd, everybody there, a bunch of teams there racing, and a race that ends up, excuse me, getting won there by Alex Palou in the Honda. Pato O'Ward finishing in second for with the McLaren Chevrolet, and Alexander Rossi for McLaren finishing on the third step of the podium.
I think that's his first podium of the season too, Rossi.
Yeah, he has not had the best year so far this year. You know, well off the lead of the points. You know, Roman Grosjean, who's, you know, up there in points, he's kind of finished, you know, second, third pretty much every single race, actually ended up finishing in 11th this year.
Yeah, I mean, other notables, Scott Dixon, 6th, Joseph Newgarden, 7th, Colton Herta, 9th, Graham Rahal, 10th, Will Power, 12th. So there's a lot of speed, you know, back in the pack. You just kind of hope that they're saving it all for the 500.
Yep.
Interesting point. 85 lap race, 3 pit stops. One pit stop where you run 50 laps on a single set of tires like Baku. No, this is 3 pit stops. And they have the same rule set where they have to use one of each set of the optional tires or the primaries.
So why don't we do this in Formula One? Let's do, with that, we'll jump over to Formula One. We'll preview Imola coming up next week. I've got a way to fix it. For one, use the same tires. You know, use the same compound or whatever it is. It needs to be worse than whatever we got in Formula One now because the tires are too good. And what Pirelli will say is, well, yeah, but then all the drivers are going to yell about our tires and how terrible our tires are. And they're right. So here's what Formula One can do. Every time you say something bad about Pirelli, whenever you say something bad, you don't like Pirelli, you don't like this, we're going to fine you $1,000, then we're going to fine you $2,000, then $4,000, then $8,000, $16,000, on up from there.
These guys all make bank. You started at $5,000 or $10,000.
Okay, start wherever, and you double it every time. $10,000, $20,000, $40,000, $80,000, $160,000.
Even Max making $48 million is not going to just willingly,
you're right,
bash the tires and give away, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of his money.
I think that's what is holding back Formula One doing something like this. And look, everybody, every team wants, you know, the tires to be perfect. I have no doubt in my mind that Pirelli could design a tire that could last. And the limit used to be the technology. The limit used to be what they could do. That is not the limit anymore. If Pirelli wanted to build a tire that could be just as grippy on lap 85 as it is on lap 1, and it could last the entire race, I have no doubt in my mind that they could. But that is not good for the show.
You're right.
It's just not good for the show. And that's a problem in Formula One right now.
And here's what it does, you know, from the nerd standpoint. It takes away strategy.
Yeah.
Because by the time, you know, you run 3 free practices or a free practice in qualifying and a qualifying race or whatever, by the time that's all, everybody's set on their strategy. The only thing that's going to change somebody from their strategy, and usually it's a one stop, you know, because the pit stops are so fast. Even the cars are so fast, you still lose time making a second pit stop.
Yeah.
There's no way you can make up that deficit, be it 20 or 22 seconds or whatever is kind of the norm. It just doesn't benefit a team to run a two-stop strategy when everybody else is running a one-stop strategy, because everybody knows there's no tire dag. If there's no tire dag, why are you even asking that question?
Yeah.
So I think everybody knows what would have to be done in order to increase the drama of strategy, you know, and the team execution of the pit stops. We're not fueling cars anymore. There's no danger. There's a pit speed limit. What's the harm?
I don't know. And all the purists will shout about it. You know, look, all the purists shouted about how much they didn't like the driver intros that we had in Miami. And I think it was Nico Hülkenberg or somebody said it was the best answer. I'm fine with it. It's not for us. Like, yeah, it's not about us. It's not. We don't like. Oh, we need to concentrate before the race, and we need to get in the zone, and we need to do this. And oh, there goes the Americans. You know, overdoing it again. All this hype. All this whatever. I'm just here to watch the racing. Guess what? You're in the minority here.
Well, and
this is not the race for you. This is for the fans who are there in attendance. It's not for the Brits in the UK who have been sitting there watching every race every Sunday, like I have
for decades.
Yes, I'm there for the racing. I also understand that any sport that is just for the sheer sport of it and all this other fluff is nonsense. Guess what? That sport is a dying sport.
Well, it's not in under normal economic circumstances, yeah. But you got to remember, these guys all came up from junior formula. The junior formula is not well attended.
No.
And so they don't have all of the pomp and circumstance. And,
yeah.
You know, so these guys, they're all shielded. They're with their race teams. You know, they're all getting groomed to go race in Formula One. And they expect it to be the same thing at just a higher level. And guess what? No.
It's not.
You have people buying your T-shirts. You have people making signs, waving your name in the stands. You have, you know, Japanese fans building models of your car and attaching them to their head. You know,
yeah.
This is not the junior formula where it's just you and your race engineers and until they, you know, drop the five red lights. This is something different. It's called a show, and the people that fund the show are the commercial entities and the tickets, you know, for the fans. And so, guess what? You want to race at a high level? You want to be part of the show? You got to give a little back.
Yeah. Perfect.
They think sitting in a chair for 45 minutes doing an autograph session is enough. No, it's not. It isn't.
Yeah, and by the way, all of the stupid nonsense that all these teams make all these drivers do on Instagram throughout the entire weekend of... And the things that are just kind of silly. Look, they're already doing a lot of goofy things out there. And maybe this is goofy. Maybe it is, you know, something that's a little different than you're used to seeing. I'm all for it. I love it. Keep doing it. Was it cringe? Was it cringe wire? It was very cringe, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, anyway.
Well, I mean, do it on race day. These guys being there on Tuesday and meeting with the Miami Dolphins and running an obstacle course and, you know.
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
That's not goofy. That's not cringe.
It was to me.
It was very cringe to me. It was very cringe worthy.
Yeah.
Why did we drop the worthy from cringe worthy? I don't know. I guess it's not cool. It's not hip. Are the kids saying
see, Leclerc went to Yankee Stadium, threw a nice pitch.
He did. Threw a great pitch, Charles Leclerc. Thank God he did not get lessons from Max Verstappen. Worst first pitch ever.
Hülkenberg throwing a football? Not much better.
Not much better than Max. A little bit better. But yeah, Charles Leclerc from the rubber, too. From the mound,
yeah.
Foot on the rubber, threw it to home plate.
Yep.
Good stuff right there.
Very nice.
Good stuff. Okay. Let's get to the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola.
Love it.
Yeah, love racing at Imola. You know, it was off the calendar for what, 12, 15 years or something?
It was a long time. It was too long.
It was too long.
It's a classic European track.
Yes.
It's a historical track for Formula One. And much like, you know, we don't race at Magna Cours. I would love to race at Magna Cours. We don't anymore. That's one of the tracks that, you know, they need to consider bringing back. We dispensed with Paul Ricard, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we need more of this. It's not going to happen. There's too many other markets they want to be in. We have three races in the States now, so, you know, it's not going to happen. But we do need to run at Imola, and I'm glad we are.
Yeah, so am I. It makes for great racing, just a really cool track in an old historic area of Italy. Is there anything but an old historic area of Italy, quite frankly?
I don't know. They call the fam.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where they are right now.
Are
they going to Imola next week?
They're not.
Why not?
They're not. They'll be flying home, I think,
on that race weekend. Bad timing.
Yeah.
Well, you look at this racetrack, and it's like, oh, what's that over there? Town. No, like on the other side of the racetrack. Yeah, town. Like, it's in town. It's just, you know, it's the racetrack is in town.
Still trees all over the place.
That looks great. I mean, looks cool. Yes. You know, it's just
elevation changes. Yep. Super. Love it.
Tight corners, fast corners, you know, everything you could hope for. Some really cool, notable corners. I love racing at Imola. This is a track that came back because of COVID, too.
Yeah.
We have COVID to thank for being back at Imola.
And you know the front straightaway?
Yeah.
You know the beauty of it?
What about it?
It's not straight.
No, it just kind of curves.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. Just don't get alongside, you know, George.
Yeah. Don't do that. But it is a great racetrack. I'm glad we're back at Imola. We have seen great, great racing there over the years. Of course, seen tragic, tragic events there over the years, too. But Imola, I love that we are back at Imola. If, you know, there's one good thing that came out of COVID. It's that we're back racing in Imola. By the way, I also love that track that we raced in Portugal, mm-hmm. although it made me feel like I was drunk. There was so much. Yeah, there's so much elevation change.
Yeah, it's tough.
I was, you know, because it's sky, ground, sky, ground, sky, ground, watching an in car.
Could you imagine doing that in a...
Whoa.
I mean, it's got to be like a roller coaster in an F1 car.
Yeah, and look, when I was 19, 22, or whatever it is, you know, for most of these younger guys, when I was Max's age, love roller coasters. Now I'm Fernando's age, and I do not like roller coasters anymore. They are not for me, my friend. So,
you're entitled, but you know, it's going to come the point in time where mom's not going to want to go on the roller coaster, and you got to take the kids. Or does Jen love roller coasters? Not the kiddie roller coasters for 4-year-olds.
Yeah,
you know they're going to be growing up soon, and you know you're going to be your feet are going to be dangling. You're going to be half upside down.
No, thank you. I will go upside down in an airplane any day. I will not go on one of those things. I did the Hulk thing with my nieces. I don't know, 5-6 years ago, out at Islands of Adventure. I remember getting off that thing and going, "Whoa, I gotta."
Got to sit down.
I got to sit down for a second here. Like, I have been so jumbled up and swung around and all this. I don't like it like I used to. I used to love that. I don't like it anymore. Anyway, Imola, not a roller coaster. Great classic European racetrack. It really is. It's what so many tracks used to be, and it still is. It hasn't lost that magic. Like, I think we kind of lost some of that magic. In Austria, I think we lost a little of that magic. In the not Nürburgring. Where did we? Where else did we?
Hockenheim.
We definitely lost the magic there at Hockenheim when we, you know, took out the long straights and everything. That was 20 plus years ago. But nonetheless, you know, never. We had some magic at Magna Cours, although it was never one of my favorite tracks. But I have always loved Imola. We stopped racing there. I never knew why. We're back, and it really is a great racetrack. And this is kind of the first of the classic racetracks that we're going to see this year. I guess I don't really think any other track. Maybe Australia is the closest to it, but not even that really.
So far, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Australia is the closest to Imola, but
maybe if we were running Adelaide.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you couldn't run Formula One at Adelaide anymore.
No, I don't think you could.
But the supercars do a fantastic race there.
When do they not put on a good show, the supercars? So racing at Imola, look, I'd love to say, you know, hey, oh, yeah, this is the chance for somebody to come in and, you know, do something unique and whatever. No, it's not. It's still going to be Red Bull. Maybe at Monaco. We'll see what happens here, but maybe at Monaco. But there's nothing that any other car in this field can do right now to beat the Red Bulls. They're just too darn fast.
Yeah, and I think the long front straightaway that isn't straight, you know, still benefits them, you know, over the course of a lap. They're not any slower in any of the corners, and they're much faster on, you know, the two straightaways that they do have. So it's going to be hard to pick anybody but a Red Bull.
Wire, quickly, your pick to win the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix.
Fernando.
I love it. By the way, wife ordered an Aston Martin hat, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, I love this. And she's like, that's not for you. That's my hat. Like, oh, that's for you? Okay, all right. You're picking Fernando. I love it. I'm going Checo, baby. So on that note, we're out of here. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Boom, 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 boom